survive if I let you.
Conquering nevermore.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh my god.
Greetings, ECW fans, and welcome to a special edition of Extreme. Now, I know that This Is Extreme has been on the show for a while now, but there will be actual episodes. I do have a couple interviews, primary podcast, Wrestling Nostalgia, that I will put out on this feed because they are ECW talents. But I didn't want to do this special episode today because this is May 11th. And we had just found out that wrestling legend, ECW legend, Sabu has passed away. And, it's heartbreaking, right? I mean, Sabu was one of the defining talents of ECW. I believe he was a game changer, a trend setter in professional wrestling, right? There's so many that came after him that emulated what he did. He was truly, you know, one of a kind, ahead of the curve on things, always did things his way. But if you hear all these people that always talk about the Mount Rushmores of this and that, if you're going to do a Mount Rushmore of ECW, I mean, it'd be hard-pressed not to put Sabu on there, right? So we wanted to remember Sabu for his contributions to wrestling and obviously his contributions to ECW. If you're an ECW fan and you listen to this podcast and have it still in your subscription, you obviously at least appreciate what Sabu brought to the game. As part of it, I am going to give you an interview that we did with Sabu for my Wrestling Nostalgia podcast a few years back. It's not that long an interview, 20-ish minutes or so. It is somewhat hard to hear because in Sabu fashion, while recording, he was walking around Las Vegas, where he's from, where he lived. So it is, you know, he's out and about doing things. So it is kind of hard to understand and hear somewhat, but it's still fun to listen to. It is the interview is conducted by my co-host on that show, Ike Isaacs. So when you hear him introduce himself, that's who he is. So it's just a little chat with Sabu that I wanted to kind of re-release in this feed for you guys to help remember him now. So let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll have that interview with Sabu.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECWpodshirt and buy yours today.
This is extreme. Hey, Bruiser buddies, I want you to listen to Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Every week, he has the roughest and toughest interviews in the podcast world today, with the best guests you could ask for. There's no bums on this show. Let Dave Dynasty be your podcasting tag team partner and listen to Wrestling Nostalgia while drinking beer, smoking cigars, and busting heads. Just look it up on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today, because the Bruiser said so.
I'm your co-host, Ike Isaacs, and today we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by none other than the homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying maniac, the legendary Sabu. Thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
No, absolutely. Anytime, of course. So we wanted to talk to you because you have a new book coming out by author Ken Casanova, and we can recommend it enough. It's called Sabu Scars, Silence, and Super WHW Publishing. And we're going to focus on early in your career and your Uncle Sheik, but I urge everyone here that's listening to book to hear about Sabu and his career overall. But Sabu, we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. When you were a kid, Sabu, what did you think when you saw your uncle, the Sheik, on TV wrestling?
Well, when I started out, he wanted me to be the best basic wrestler there was, you know. So I only learned the very basics for the first few years. I didn't really learn any flying or anything with that, but it was all basic hand wrestling, arm lock, hammer lock, stuff like that. Boring stuff that the best of, the guys who are the best, they're good at that stuff. But it's overlooked by a lot of young guys because they want to go into the flying stuff.
Yeah, and definitely not in those early years. Wrestling was a lot different than what you see nowadays, of course. So, like you said, it was good stuff. No, you're okay. But no, you said in your book that you wanted him to train you, but he wouldn't initially. What made him finally give in to train you?
Well, I wanted him to train me when I was a little kid, and he said, no, I had another wrestle first, which I didn't understand. So what he meant was I had an amateur wrestle first in high school, junior high and high school. So I did that, figuring out that's what he wanted. He didn't pinpoint saying that's what I want. He just said, I wanted to learn how to wrestle first. So I learned how to wrestle first, then I came up to his house and I asked him to train me. He said, of course, you know. But not that easy. I had to keep going out to his house every day for a few weeks.
And that's an interesting concept. You need to learn how to wrestle first. So obviously you did. You got trained. But your training was very old school, right? You were taught respect and paying your dues.
Yeah, old school. Yeah, back in when I was training, a good wrestler was judged on how good he could think on his feet, not how good he could remember a spot. Now, if you could remember a spot, that's okay. If you could react on your feet, that was better. You know, like, I mean, 90% of the matches, they're guidelines, but they're outlet, you know, you have to put them together on the offense. And the guys who could try to throw it on the feet, were the ones who could feel good.
And also during that time, you know, especially in those early years, the concept of kayfabe was very much relevant. Obviously, nowadays, that's a little bit different, but was that something that your uncle taught you, was, you know, kayfabe and respecting the business?
Well, yeah, see, I pointed out on a picture on Twitter the other day, someone said, it's a case, SR Superfly, and they laughed about it. And I laughed about it. I said, it wasn't up to me, it's up to the promoter to call you anything you want. I was just happy to wrestle. So when I got to the ring, I didn't know what my name was. They go, hey, somebody, look around, who are they talking about? Oh, me. I've done that many times. Because it doesn't matter what my name is, I'm in the first match just to learn. And know my role. I only did first match stuff, you know. Nothing out of the ring, no chairs, no table, no blood, nothing like that, of course.
Like you said, it was definitely different back then, too, but...
Yeah, that's old school training. Now, you practice your promos, your character, all this stuff before you even have a match, you know. All that stuff comes later. You develop it as you find out what kind of wrestler you are and the kind of, the style you favor more.
I like your statement there about how nowadays that they learn how to shoot a promo and their character before they even have a match. But
wrestling comes first. The bottom line is wrestling. If you're not good at wrestling, who cares about your promos? Because then your promo will be your second backup, you know. So you're not good at wrestling, maybe you're good at promos. But first, you try to be good at wrestling. And then you progress, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely feel like that should be the way of thinking now. But certainly, sometimes it isn't.
I had guys their first match in a best match. I didn't have a best match for 10 years. I didn't know what a best match was other than somebody in the main event who wanted to kill each other.
Also early in your career, you debuted as Terry SR and said you never asked the Sheik that what the initials meant. So what do you think or what do you hear that those initials stood for?
I heard it was Sheik's Revenge and also Sheik's Relative or... he said one time it was not super race, but Arabs were a super race, like the Nazis were a super race, but they were wrong. They were wrong too. that was the rumors. I only heard it from them that it's a super race, but he said it as a joke, so I didn't believe him. And anybody who asked him, he told him to mind their own business. Because in those are forgotten about days. We didn't know about
But I like Sheik's Revenge. I think that one sounds pretty cool. So, but you were also at one point known as Terry Superfly Snuka, and you were billed as Jimmy Snuka's brother. How did that happen?
That wasn't my choice. Believe me, that was put on me at the last minute. One day, my cousin Eddie, Sheik's son, which he didn't know about either, my uncle didn't, he goes, we have a special guest tonight. the brother of Jimmy Superfly Smith there. And Mr. Adler's here, all right? He goes, Terry, Superfly Smith, I goes, Terry, not this here, who's that? I look around, but he's pointing at me. So then I was pretty disappointed because I go, you know, you called me something that, you know, one of my idols without his approval, and I don't want to be called Superfly, you know. But it was funny. He called me Terry Superfly Smith, and I was the brother of Jimmy Smith, and I go, well, where is he at? But I never approved of it. Like I said, you do what they tell you to do, and don't work.
That's what I was going to say, kind of calling back to what you mentioned earlier. You just kind of go with it, like you said, because if you don't do it, you don't work. So obviously, since we're talking about your early career, later on, you had another professional wrestler by the name of Rob Van Dam, who your uncle also helped to train. Did you and him hit it off in the beginning?
Yes. He came out from a friend of our mutual friend named Samson. This guy Tom Bennett, he was a mutual friend of ours, and I thought, you know, he's a good guy for me to beat up in practice. He introduced Rob to us, and I thought Rob would be a good punching bag for him, but he turned out to be more than I learned how to be back for him. So I learned a lot from him, and he learned everything from me, and I learned a lot from him.
Definitely a good person to learn from as well, like you mentioned, but...
When at the time when I was training these guys, I was 5 years in the business, so I didn't really want to go back to step one again. I wanted to keep advancing. So I tried to move Bob up as fast as I could, so we'd be at the close to the same level, so we'd bounce moves off each other instead of the 10 bouncing moves off me. And it worked, when my uncle wasn't looking, we did a bunch of crazy stuff. Then when he was looking, we went back to basics, so we were the best at the basics. You know, in the meantime, I train, practice training, I always start out with the basics, headlock, lock up, headlock, all that stuff. I started with all that first, then I started doing whatever I'm going to do in practice.
So then also, part of your book as well was, you mentioned that when everyone started discovering that you were the Sheik's nephew, you decided to utilize that, and that's how the name Sabu came to be. But how did Sheik come up with that character of Sabu?
Well, Sabu, Sheik was a fan of the actor Sabu in the Jungle Book. The actor in the Jungle Book, the character is called Mowgli, but the actor is called Sabu. In 1920, and my uncle grew up in 1920. So when he was a little kid, he used to put a towel on his head and run around that crazy like the Sabu the big guy did on the Jungle Book. And so when he got older, when he had a baby, he wanted to name his first kid Sabu, and my aunt wanted a dog Sabu. So I was Sabu's dog. He's a white German Shepherd. And then I was second Sabu. So to me, it's a God-given name. It's not a name I chose. It's a name someone chose for me. So I might like that name better than Terry. It sounds better. So I react to Sabu more than I react to Terry. Not because I'm egotistical, it's because I consider it a God-given name. When someone says Sabu, it turns the light out of my head, and I look around and say, who's calling me? If someone says Sabu, I rarely look around. I know they're not talking about me.
Absolutely. And also, you know, Sabu's better than Terry Superfly Snook, of course.
Right. But I was just trying to keep a job. I don't care if they called me. I was shocked they did that. But I wasn't happy with it, but I was happy to have a match, you know.
So you worked in, pretty much everywhere, but earlier in your career, you worked in Memphis and other areas and ultimately wound up in Japan. And that's where you kind of stayed to develop and help you come into your own.
One day, somebody called my uncle and said they were looking for him and somebody else for a world tag team tournament, a world Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, FMW. And the tournament was karate versus wrestling versus boxing versus judo, and so on. And so we were the wrestlers, whatever. So they told him to bring anybody he wanted. He goes, well, I'll bring my nephew. They go, it don't matter who he is, just bring him. So he brought him from me, and the week before I go out, I go, Sheik, what do you want me to do different than I haven't already been doing? He goes, I want you to do that shit in the backyard when you think I'm not watching. I want you to do it now. You know, all the stuff I was doing behind his back, but I think he's free, he's a thief. Now he says, now I want you to do that stuff you think I can't see, do it in the ring now. So I did the best I could, and it got over a drop of the hat. and the Japanese that named and all my news. I didn't have no names for them. I never did them in matches, like Arabian Press, all that stuff. I never did that in a match before. But they said, what do you call that, Arabian Press? I said, Arabian Press.
You know, Arabian Facebuster sounds just a little bit better.
Yeah, and everything was Arabian Facebuster, Arabian Air Saturday, everything. The magazines named me, and the fans named it. I didn't name nothing myself. I just went with it. And it's probably better than what I came up with. Like Arabian Facebuster, that's the big gap of the chair. I would never thought of that. I was the big gap of the chair. Yeah, and it came out naturally. It wasn't like a plan. I got a blueprint for this move. I didn't. It came out of nowhere, and the fans named it out of nowhere. And it was the best name they could name it. I just got off the road from we were in Chicago, I think. Yeah, Chicago for a pay-per-view party, and then we were somewhere else last night. The night before that. Anyway, we're back here. I got a horsey voice. Excuse me.
No, you're okay. No, I was going to say, the next thing I was kind of curious about, you know, you've also said, and this is something that I've personally seen, like on our podcast, a lot of people talk about the Sheik. But when you hate it when people refer to your uncle as the original Sheik, as he is just the Sheik. Since you knew him on a different level than most, tell us what your uncle meant to you personally.
Well, you know, I have been biased because he was my uncle. You know, he took care of me like a him and my mother were brothers and sisters, so they were always close. But him as a wrestler, I was better than that. I didn't think that he was bad was cheating. I thought what he was doing was surviving. Because everybody he fought was bigger than that. I was a giant, Bobo Brazil. All his friends were giants. So he had to leave my life by poking him in the eye, I guess. That's what I looked at. I didn't look at it as him cheating. But I never wanted to pattern my style after that. I wanted to work at it and work at a different style and then poking him in the eye, you know. And everybody now tells me I should wrestle like him because it would save my body. I'm not going to copy him at no cost if I don't have to. I'll imitate him in my own way. I'm not going to just sit there and wrestle like him.
Right, and I feel like your style of wrestling is iconic. When people think of Sabu, they say, oh, this is what I think of, and they think of this iconic, you know, super unique style of wrestling. So certainly, you know, you could definitely come into your own with that. I guess one other thing, you know, we've talked a lot about your uncle and your early areas of your wrestling career. But in addition to that, you know, we've already talked about this a little bit, but how much did he instill in you about protecting your character in the business?
Oh, yeah, well, I would just say it's a type of character. It's the way I really am without having to hold back. Because I don't talk, I do all my actions, all my speaking I do with my actions, and that's why I worked on the whole rest. I wasn't like a shit doctor. I had a shit doctor that you got me going, but then eventually come from before too many words, you know. So I try to, you know, my fabulous character is just me being me, because I'm naturally shy. I don't like to talk in public. Never say I couldn't talk, just refuse to talk. You know? And if I have to speak in front of people, you have to pay me more. And to me, that's work way harder than I know how to do. I get a lot of respect for guys who can talk. I'm not one that can talk and believe what I'm saying if it's not the truth. And also when I was a kid, me and my mother was watching some wrestling, and everybody was yelling and screaming, I'm a kid, this guy, a kid, that guy. Everybody was the same. My mom goes, you're going to do this, right? I go, yeah. You know, after I was like 6 or 7 years old. I go, yeah, she promised me. You'll never do that, but never say a word. So I'm trying to keep true to her promise, but I'm shy.
Right. No, I understand. And I definitely feel like it works into your benefit a lot of the time, especially with your character. But that's a good little story. That's a good little story. Keeping the promise. That's right.
But some of those, you know, being friendly with the press, you know, if it's just me, I don't talk much. You know, Like, I'm talking to you because you got real uncomfortable. Like, 5 minutes from now, I probably got cold feet, so I told you I wasn't here.
No, I understand. Well, I'm glad we got a hold of you, Dan.
Right on. I'm glad you. But that book, we put a lot of history and a lot of stuff. People didn't know about Detroit or about my uncle's history. His history is a little more fascinating than mine because it's hardly defined. So I want his history in there. I kind of cheated. But it's part of me, so that's why it's in there.
So actually, one last thing for you. I know we've talked quite a bit, you know, just about your early career and your uncle. But one last thing we just want to ask you here at the Dave Dynasty Show is, you know, since, you know, you guys are very close with your uncle, do you have maybe a story of the Sheik that you can share, maybe something that most haven't heard, any kind of like a funny story, anything like that?
Yeah, well, one quick thing, we're steaming down Georgia, I-75, going south to Florida, and we get pulled over by this black cop. And that guy, the bike's put out so fast, whatever. And she goes, tell him who you are. I said, I'm sorry. He said, not you. Tell him who you're driving. I go, oh, I'm driving the Sheik. And just back in the back seat. He goes, beat your man. I go, yeah. And then the Sheik comes like, wave to him. And he goes, you can't beat Dusty Rhodes. He goes, I bet you the fuck I can. He goes, all right. Got in his car. And he goes to escort officer to the middle of Florida. Yeah, it was funny.
I just wanted to thank you again. And for everybody listening, Sabu's book is Sabu, Scar, Silence, and Superglue from WHOW Publishing. You can get your copy and lots of other cool stuff by going to sabuandsupergenie.com and ordering it directly from the man himself. But it's been a legitimate honor getting to talk to you, sir. You are, by all definitions, the legend of legends, and I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. And we're really excited about your book. So really, we thank you for giving us some time just to talk to you. It's honestly, it's incredible. Thank you so much.
You got it, man. Thank you.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod. Okay, and welcome back to This is Extreme. Again, I'm not going to say a whole lot here. Rest in peace, Sabu. We're remembering Sabu for who he was, what he contributed to wrestling, but particularly with this podcast, what he contributed to ECW. If you're listening to this, I thank you for still remaining a subscriber to the podcast. Like I said, there will be occasional episodes that will pop up. Interviews that I do for Wrestling Nostalgia that are ECW-centric, I think I'm going to go ahead and release them on this feed as well to kind of hit those ECW fans that were subscribers of this podcast. So thank you for your support and your appreciation. You never know. This is Extreme might make a fuller comeback in the future. It's possible. I remain an ECW fan. Very much love it. So you never know what's going to happen in the future. So if you subscribe to the podcast wherever on your favorite platform, please continue to do so. Because like I said, at the very least, there will be the occasional episodes that pop up. So as always, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.